We're continuing chapter 27 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. The happiness Harry felt after the aftermath of the Quibbler interview had long since evaporated. As a dull March blurred into a squally April, his life seemed to have become one long series of worries and problems again. Umbridge had continued attending all Care of Magical Creatures lessons, so it had become very difficult to deliver Firenze's warning to Hagrid. At last, Harry had managed it by pretending he had lost his copy of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and doubled back after class one day. When he passed on Firenze's message, Hagrid gazed at him for a moment through his puffy, blackened eyes, apparently taken aback. Then he seemed to pull himself together. "Nice book, Firenze," he said gruffly. "But you don't know what he's talking about on this. The attempt's coming on fine." "Hagrid, what are you up to?" asked Harry seriously. "Because you've got to be careful. Umbridge has already sacked Trelawney, and if you ask me, she's on a roll. If you're doing anything, you shouldn't be." "There's things more important than keeping a job," said Hagrid, though his hands shook slightly as he said this, and a basin full of gnarl droppings crashed to the floor. "Don't worry about me, Harry. Just get along now. There's a good lad." Harry had no choice but to leave Hagrid mopping all the dung over his floor. But he felt dispirited as he trudged up back to the castle. Meanwhile, as the teachers and Hermione persisted in reminding them, the owls were drawing ever nearer. All of the fifth years were suffering from stress to some degree. But Hannah Abbott became the first to receive a calming draught from Madame Pomfrey after she burst into tears during herbology and sobbed that she was too stupid to take exams and wanted to leave school now. If it had not been for the DA lessons, Harry thought he would have been extremely unhappy. He sometimes felt he was living for the hours he spent in the room of requirement, working hard but thoroughly enjoying himself at the same time, swelling with pride as he looked around at his fellow DA members and saw how far they had come. Indeed, Harry sometimes wondered how Umbridge was going to react when all of the members of the DA received outstanding in their defense against the Dark Arts Owls. They had finally started work on Patronuses, which everybody had been very keen to practice, though as Harry kept reminding them, producing a Patronus in the middle of a brightly lit classroom when they were not under threat was very different to producing it when confronted with something like a Dementor. "Oh, don't be such a killjoy," said Cho brightly, watching her silver swan-shaped Patronus soar around the Room of Requirement during their last lesson before Easter. "They're so pretty." "They're not supposed to be pretty. They're supposed to protect you," said Harry patiently. "What we need is a boggart or something. That's how I learned. I had to conjure a Patronus as the boggart was pretending to be a Dementor." "But that would be really scary," said Lavender, who was shooting puffs of silver vapor out of the end of her wand. "And I can't do it," she added angrily. Neville was having trouble too. His face was screwed up in concentration, but only feeble wisps of silver smoke issued from his wand tip. "You've got to think of something happy," Harry reminded him. "I'm trying," said Neville miserably. He was trying so hard his round face was actually shining with sweat. "Harry, I think I'm doing it," yelled Seamus, who had been brought along for his first ever DA meeting by Dean. "Look, it's gone. But it was definitely something Harry. Hermione's Patronus, a shining silver otter, was gamboling all along around her. "They are sort of nice, aren't they?" she said, looking at it fondly. The door to the Room of Requirement opened and then closed again. Harry looked around to see who had entered, but there didn't seem to be anybody there. It was a few moments before he realized that the people close to the door had fallen silent. The next thing he knew, something was tugging at his robes, somewhere near the knee. He looked down and saw, to his great astonishment, Dobby, the house elf, peering up at him from beneath his usual eight hats. "Hi, Dobby," he said. What's wrong?" The elf's eyes were wide with terror, and he was shaking. The members of the DA closest to Harry had fallen silent now. Everybody in the room was watching Dobby. The few Patronuses people had managed to conjure faded away into silver mist, leaving the room looking much darker than before. "Harry Potter, sir," squeaked the house elf, trembling from head to foot. Harry Potter, sir. Dobby's come to warn you. But the house elves have been warned not to tell. He ran headfirst at the wall. Harry, who had some experience of Dobby's habits of self-punishment, made to seize him. But Dobby merely bounced off the stone, cushioned by his eight hats. Hermione and a few other girls let out squeaks of fear and sympathy. What happened, Dobby? Harry asked, grabbing the elf's tiny arms and holding him away from anything from which he might seek to hurt himself. Harry Potter, she. Dobby hit himself hard with the nose of his free fist. Harry seized that, too. Who is she, Dobby? But he thought he knew. Surely only one she could induce such fear in Dobby. The elf looked up, slightly cross-eyed, and mouthed wordlessly. Umbridge? Asked Harry, horrified. Dobby nodded, and then tried to bang his head off Harry's knees, but Harry held him at bay. What about her? Dobby, she hasn't found out about this, about us, about the DA? He read the answer in the elf's stricken face. His hands held fast by Harry. The elf tried to kick himself and sank into his knees. Is she coming? Harry asked quietly. Dobby let out a howl. Yes, Harry Potter, yes. Harry straightened up and looked around at the motionless, terrified people gazing at the thrashing elf. What are you waiting for? Harry bellowed. Run! They all pelted toward the exit at once, forming a scrum at the door. Then people burst through. Harry could hear them sprinting along the corridors and hoped that they had the sense not to try and make it all the way to the dormitories. It was only 9 to 9. If they just took refuge in the library or the Owlery, which were both nearer. Harry, come on, shrieked Hermione, from the center of the knot of people now fighting to get out. He scooped up Dobby, who was still attempting to do himself serious injury, and ran with the elf in his arms to join the back of the queue. Dobby, this is an order. Get back down to the kitchen with the other elves, and if she asks you whether you warned me, lie and say no, said Harry. And I forbid you to hurt yourself, he added, dropping the elf as he made it over the threshold at last, and slamming the door behind him. Thank you, Harry Potter, squeaked Dobby, and he streaked off. Harry glanced left and right. The others were all moving so fast he only caught glimpses of flying heels at the other end of the corridor before they vanished. He started to run right. There was a boys' bathroom just up ahead. He could pretend he'd been there all the time if he could just reach it. But something caught his ankles, and he fell spectacularly, skidding along his front for 6 feet before coming to a halt. Someone behind him was laughing. He rolled over on his back and saw Malfoy, concealed in a niche beneath an ugly dragon-shaped vase. Trip Jinx Potter, he said. Hey, Professor, I've got one. Umbridge came bustling around the corner, breathless but wearing a delighted smile. It's him, she said jubilantly at the sight of Harry on the floor. Excellent, Draco, excellent. Oh, very good. 50 points to Slytherin. I'll take him from here. Stand up, Potter. Harry got to his feet, glaring at the pair of them. He had never seen Umbridge looking so happy. She seized his arm in a vice-like grip and turned, beaming broadly, to Malfoy. You hop along and see if you can round up any more of them, Draco, she said. Tell them to look in the library. Anybody out of breath? Check the bathrooms. Miss Parkinson can do the girls' one. Off you go. And you, she added in her softest and most dangerous voice as Malfoy walked away. You come with me to the headmaster's office, Potter. They were at the stone gargoyle within minutes. Harry wondered how many of the others had been caught. He thought of Ron, Mrs. Weasley would kill him, and of how Hermione would feel if she was expelled before she could take her owls. And it had been Seamus's very first meeting, and Neville had been getting so good. Fizzing Wisby sang Umbridge, and the stone gargoyle jumped aside. The walls behind split open, and they ascended the moving stone staircase. They reached the polished door with a griffin knocker. But Umbridge did not bother to knock. She strode straight ahead, still holding tight to Harry. The office was full of people. Dumbledore was sitting behind his desk, his expression serene, the tips of his long fingers together. Professor McGonagall stood rigidly beside him, her face extremely tense. Cornelius Fudge, Minister of Magic, was rocking backward and forward on his toes beside the fire, apparently immensely pleased with the situation. Kingsley Shacklebolt and a tough-looking wizard Harry did not recognize, with very short, wiry hair, were positioned on either side of the door like guards, and the freckled, bespeckled form of Percy Weasley hovered excitedly beside the wall, with a quill and a heavy scroll of parchment in his hands, apparently poised to take notes. The portraits of old headmasters and mistresses were not shamming sleep tonight. All of them were watching what was happening, below, alert and serious. As Harry entered, a few flitted into neighboring frames and whispered urgently into their neighbors' ears. Harry pulled himself free of Umbridge's grasp at the door, as the door swung behind them. Cornelius Fudge was glaring at him with a kind of vicious satisfaction upon his face. "Well," he said, "well, well, well," Harry replied with the dirtiest look he could muster. His heart drummed madly inside, but his brain was oddly cool and clear. "He was heading back to Gryffindor Tower," said Umbridge. There was an indecent excitement in her voice, the same callous pleasure Harry had heard as she watched Professor Trelawney dissolving with misery in the entrance hall. The Malfoy boy cornered him. Did he, said Fudge appreciatively. "I must remember to tell Lucius. Well, Potter, I expect you know why you're here." Harry fully intended to respond with a defiant yes. His mouth had opened, and the word was half-formed when he caught sight of Dumbledore's face. Dumbledore was not looking directly at Harry. His eyes were fixed upon a point just over his shoulder. But as Harry stared at him, he shook his head a fraction of an inch to each side. Harry changed direction mid-word. No. "I beg your pardon," said Fudge. "No," said Umbridge, said Harry firmly. "You don't know why you're here?" "No, I don't," said Harry. Fudge looked incredulously from Harry to Professor Umbridge. Harry took advantage of a momentary inattention to steal another quiet look at Dumbledore, who gave the carpet of the tiniest nods and a shadow of a wink. "So you have no idea," said Fudge, in a voice positively sagging with sarcasm, "why Professor Umbridge has brought you to this office. You are not aware that you have broken any school rules." "School rules?" said Harry. "No." Or ministry decrees?" amended Fudge angrily. "Not that I'm aware of," said Harry blandly. His heart was still hammering very fast. It was almost worth telling these lies to watch Fudge's blood pressure rising, but he could not see how on earth he was going to get away with them. If somebody had tipped off Umbridge about the DA, then he, the leader, might as well be packing his trunk right now. "So it's news to you, is it?" said Fudge, his voice now thick with anger, "that an illegal student organization has been discovered with the school?" "Yes, it is," said Harry, hoisting an unconvincing look of innocent surprise onto his face. "I think, Minister," said Umbridge silkily from behind him, "we might make better progress if I fetch our informant." "Yes, yes, do," said Fudge, nodding, and he glanced maliciously at Dumbledore as Umbridge left the room. "There's nothing like a good witness, is there, Dumbledore?" "Nothing at all, Cornelius," said Dumbledore gravely, inclining his head. There was a wait of several minutes in which nobody looked at each other. Then Harry heard the door open behind him. Umbridge moved past him into the room. Gripping by the shoulder, Cho's curly-haired friend Marietta, who was hiding her face in her hands. "Don't be scared, dear. Don't be frightened," said Professor Umbridge softly, patting her on the back. "It's quite good all right now. You've done the right thing. The minister is very pleased with you. He'll be telling your mother what a good girl you've been. Marietta's mother, Minister," she added, looking up at Fudge, "is Madame Edgecombe from the Department of Magical Transportation. Flu Network Office. She's been helping us police the Hogwarts fires, you know." "Jolly good, jolly good," said Fudge heartily. "Like mother, like daughter, eh? Well, come on now, dear. Look up. Don't be shy. Let's hear what you've got. Galloping gargoyles." As Marietta raised her head, Fudge leapt backward in shock, nearly landing himself on the fire. He cursed and stamped on the hem of his cloak, which had started to smoke, and Marietta gave a wail and pulled the neck of her robes right up to her eyes, but not before the whole room had seen that her face was horribly disfigured by a series of close-set purple pustules that had spread across her nose and cheeks to form the word sneak. "Never mind the spots now, dear," said Umbridge impatiently. "Just take your robes away from your mouth and tell the minister." But Marietta gave another muffled wail and shook her head frantically. "Oh, very well, you silly girl, I'll tell him," snapped Umbridge. She hitched her sickly smile back onto her face. Well, Minister, Miss Edgecombe came here to my office shortly after dinner, this evening, and told me she wanted to tell me. She said that if I proceeded to a secret room on the 7th floor, sometimes known as the Room of Requirement, I would find out something to my advantage. I questioned her a little further, and she admitted that there was to be some kind of meeting there. Unfortunately, at this point, this hex, she waved impatiently at Marietta's concealed face, came into operation, and upon catching sight of her face in my mirror, the girl became too distracted to tell me any more. Well now, said Fudge, fixing Marietta with what he evidently imagined was a kind and fatherly look. It is very brave of you, my dear, to come tell Professor Umbridge. You did exactly the right thing. Now, will you tell me what had happened at this meeting? What was its purpose? Who was there? But Marietta would not speak. She merely shook her head again, her eyes wide and fearful. But Marietta, haven't we got a counter jinx for this? Fudge asked Umbridge impatiently, gesturing at Marietta's face, so she can speak freely. I haven't yet managed to find one, Umbridge admitted grudgingly, and Harry felt a surge of pride in Hermione's jinxing ability. But it doesn't matter if she won't speak. I can take up the story from here. You will remember, Minister, that I sent a report back in October that Potter had met a number of his fellow students in the Hogshead and Hogsmeade. And what evidence is there for that? Cut in Professor McGonagall. I have testimony from Willie Widdershins, Minerva, who happened to be in the bar at the time. He was heavily bandaged, but it's true. His hearing was quite unimpaired, said Umbridge smugly. He heard every word Potter said and hastened straight to the school to report to me. Oh, so that's why he wasn't prosecuted for setting up all those regurgitating toilets, said Professor McGonagall, raising her eyebrows. What an interesting insight into our justice system. Blatant corruption, roared the portrait of the corpulent, red-nosed wizard on the wall behind Dumbledore's desk. The Ministry did not cut deals with petty criminals in my day. No, sir, they did not. Thank you, Fortescue, that will do, said Dumbledore softly. The purpose of Potter's meeting with these students, continued Professor Umbridge, was to persuade them to join an illegal society whose aim was to learn spells and curses the Ministry has decided are inappropriate for school age. I think you'll find you're wrong there, Dolores, Dumbledore said quietly, peering at her over his half-moon spectacles, perched halfway down his crooked nose. Harry stared at him. He could not see how Dumbledore was going to talk him out of this one. If Willie Widdershins had indeed heard every word he said in the Hogshead, there was simply no escaping it. Ooh, said Fudge, bouncing up and down at the balls of his feet again. Yes, do. Let's hear the latest cock-and-bull story designed to pull Potter out of trouble. Go on, then, Dumbledore, go on. Willie Widdershins was lying, was he? Or was it Potter's identical twin in the Hogshead that day? Or is there the simple, usual explanation involving a reversal of time, a dead man coming back to life, and a couple of invisible dementors? Percy Weasley let out a hearty laugh. Oh, good, Minister, very good. Harry could have kicked him. Then he saw, to his astonishment, that Dumbledore was smiling gently, too. Cornelius, I do not deny, and nor, I am sure, does Harry, that he was in the Hogshead that day, nor that he was trying to recruit students to a defense against the Dark Arts group. I am merely pointing out to Dolores that it is quite wrong to suggest that such a group was, at the time, illegal. If you remember, the Ministry decree banning all student societies was not put into effect until 2 days after Harry's Hogsmeade meeting, so he was not breaking any rules in the Hogshead at all. Percy looked as though he had been struck in the face by something very heavy. Fudge remained motionless, in mid-bounce, his mouth hanging open. Umbridge recovered first. That's all very fine, Headmaster, she said, smiling sweetly, but we are now nearly six months on from the introduction of the Educational Decree No. 24. If the first meeting was not illegal, all those that have happened since are most certainly. Well, said Dumbledore, surveying her with polite interest over the top of his interlocked fingers, they certainly would be if they had continued after the decree came into effect. Do you have any evidence that these meetings continued? As Dumbledore spoke, Harry heard a rustle behind him, and rather thought Kingsley whispered something. He could have sworn, too, that he felt something brush against his side, a gentle something like a draft or bird wings, but looking down, he saw nothing there. Evidence, repeated Umbridge, with that horrible, wide, toad-like smile. Have you not been listening, Dumbledore? Why do you think Miss Edgecombe is here? Oh, can she tell us about 6 months' worth of meetings? Said Dumbledore, raising his eyebrows. I was under the impression she was merely reporting a meeting tonight. Miss Edgecombe...
You did so good. It's time to go to bed.
Okay. All right, we'll stop there, kitten. I love you so much, kitty.
Good night.
Good night, baby.